America.
And welcome in to another edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Hi there, Mark Congleton, your sometimes humble host, sitting behind a microphone for this hour of observation, insight, and a bit of absurdity. How are you? Hope you're doing well. Sorry about yesterday. That kind of came as a surprise. And no podcast yesterday because one of my outside studio appointments rescheduled for early yesterday morning. Too early for me to be able to do the live podcast and proceed with life as normal. So no podcast yesterday. And that happens from time to time. And just as far as total honesty is concerned, I get paid for that. I don't get paid for this. So listen, if I'm going to get paid for something, I'm going to choose that. I'm a capitalist. It is the Wednesday, June 17th edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. It is the 17th day of June. We're in the middle of the year. It's hot. It's humid. It's uncomfortable. And parts of Montana got over a foot of snow last night. So just remember that. You could be sitting under a foot of snow. Actually, there's some people who would prefer that. I think I may be among those people because honestly, a foot of snow, all that beautiful snow and a little chill on these days like we've been having lately would be amazing. On Monday, I decided to take the little car, the Miata, the drop top, the one with no air conditioning. And it got up around 90 while I was out running around. Now, it was supposed to be, this on Monday. I had an 11 a.m. session, and then I had a 1 p.m. session. The 11 would have taken, I would have been out by 12:15, hop in the car, go grab a sandwich, come back to the studio, do the 1 o'clock. I'd be out of there by 2:15, maybe 2:30, head back to the house. Well, no. The 11 a.m. session canceled, and that opened the door for me to be able to go run some errands in the little car with no air conditioning and a black interior, and it's in the upper 80s. So you can get the idea. It was an uncomfortable day. The little car is great as long as you're moving. You've got a breeze. Everything is great. But when you're sitting still in traffic and the sun's beating down on you and the asphalt is hot and the sun is hot and the interior is hot, what I'm trying to say is it's hot. So my wife and I enjoy this little car mainly because late in the afternoons, late in the evenings, especially in the summer, late spring, early fall, we can hop in it at the end of a stressful day and go out for some therapy. Just ride in the country on twisty backwoods, backcountry roads with trees, and it's cool and it's shady and it's just wonderful. And even to the point, into the times of the year when it's a little chilly, I put seat heaters in. One of the things I did was reupholstered the car. So it has new seat covers and such, part of the project. And as part of that, I thought, you know what, while I'm at it, why not? Let's look and see how much it's going to hurt to put in seat covers. Oddly enough, not that much. So I got some seat heaters. They're not that hard to install. So I put in the seat heaters under the new upholstery before the upholstery went in. And now in the chillier times of the year, we can drop the top and go for a ride, wear a jacket, and have seat heaters. That's kind of nice. But in the summertime, no air conditioning. I got to do something about that. It was just hot. Anyway, that was pretty much Monday. And yesterday, the session got rescheduled and it was for like 9:30 in the morning Central Time, which doesn't leave me time. I can't get to the studio that quickly after doing this. So, why don't you do it some other time of the day, Mark? Because I like doing this live and I have a set time that I like to do it live, and all my computer programming is set up to run it at this time, and so there you have it. It's just, honestly, it's just kind of a hassle to do it any other time, so I do it now. Plus, like I said, I don't get paid for this, I get paid for that. So that was yesterday. I got that done yesterday, and I worked on other things yesterday afterwards. I spent the majority of the day, I got through, came home, had some lunch, and then went to the garage and removed both of the side windows from the Miata, and cleaned everything inside the doors and replaced the windows, and didn't really improve the situation with how slow one of the windows is moving. So that was kind of wasted yesterday. But today, we're back in the saddle again. Things are back to normal, or abnormal. And what else is there to do? Oh, the only thing... I have other things to do, but the big thing for me today, the most stressful, strenuous thing I will be doing, is replacing a drive belt on a riding lawnmower. That's it. The rest of the day, it kind of depends on whether or not I can get the right tool to do a job I need to do. Anyway, so there's that. Wow, man, I'm rambling. You know, I like to start things off with a bit of absurdity, if I can. And I really, honestly, just can't wrap my head around the way Democrats think. And hence, we have the first of a couple of absurd items of the day. First up, a top mainstream fact checker wrote on yesterday, that the kente cloths that Democrats wore earlier this month after the death of George Floyd were historically worn by an empire involved in the West African slave trade. I think I mentioned this one day last week. Way to go, guys. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, Senate Minority Leader Charles Schumer, other top Democrats wore the cloth to an event on the 8th in response to Floyd's death, which was widely criticized online. USA Today fact-checked the following statement from a Facebook user. Here's what that said. Yesterday, the Democrats wore kente scarves and knelt down for their photo op. So check this out. Kente cloth was worn by the Ashanti. It's made of silk, so the affluent wore it. The Ashanti were also known as slave owners and traders. Huh? This makes me wonder why they chose to wear this particular tribe's garb. It's important to note that the cloth has historical significance that extends beyond the slave trade and has become a symbol of pride for African Americans over the last 50 years. USA Today rated the claim true, saying that the kente cloth was historically worn by the Asante people of Ghana, who were involved in the West African slave trade. Here's what USA Today's researcher found. Kente cloth comes from the Asante, or Ashanti, peoples of Ghana and Ewe peoples of Ghana and Togo. A popular legend claims creators of kente cloth presented the cloth to Ashanti Hene Osei Tutu, the Asante kingdom's first leader. Tutu named the cloth kente, which means basket, and adopted the fabric as a royal cloth for special occasions. Tutu, who lived from 1660 to about 1712 or 1717, unified several small Asante kingdoms to create the Asante Empire. He is credited with expanding the Asante throughout most of Ghana and introducing his subjects to the gold and slave trades along the West African coast. The Asante supplied British and Dutch traders with slaves in exchange for firearms, which they used to expand their empire. Slaves were often acquired as tributes from smaller states or captured during war. Some slaves were brought across the Atlantic while others stayed in Africa to work in gold fields. According to the BBC, by the end of the 18th century, the region exported an estimated 6,000 to 7,000 slaves per year. So, Nancy Pelosi and her dem dummy buddies wore something that was symbolic of the slave trade in Western Africa to mark their solidarity with African Americans. And you know what's sad? Is that probably most people on the left, progressives, don't care, didn't know, and if you point it out to them, will quickly change the subject to Orange Man bad. That's absurd item number one. Now, absurd item number two. Yeah, there's two of them today. Roger Goodell, you know, the commissioner of the NFL, during an interview yesterday, said he wants a team, an NFL team, to sign former NFL quarterback Colin Kaepernick. And that if Kaepernick doesn't make it back on the field, then he's invited to the table to help and guide the NFL on social issues. Quote, well, listen, if he wants to resume his career in the NFL, then obviously it's going to take a team to make that decision. But I welcome that, support a club making that decision, and encourage them to do that. If his efforts are not on the field, but continuing to work in this space, we welcome him to that table and to help us, guide us, help us make better decisions about the kinds of things that need to be done in the communities. We have invited him in before, and we want to make sure that everybody's welcome at the table and trying to help us deal with some very complex, difficult issues that have been around for a long time. But I hope we're at a point now where everybody's committed to making long-term, sustainable change. Now, Kaepernick's been widely criticized for some of his actions, including kneeling during the national anthem, donating money to a group honoring convicted cop killer and wanted terrorist Assata Shakur, wearing socks portraying police officers as pigs, and wearing shirts of brutal Cuban dictator Fidel Castro. Yeah, he wore Castro t-shirts. And he's worn he's worn others as well. Kaepernick has also claimed that the United States has conducted American terrorist attacks against black and brown people for the expansion of American imperialism. Now, that remark was featured in a tweet from Kaepernick and came after U.S. forces killed Qasem Soleimani, the head of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps Quds Force, which is a designated terrorist organization. Now, remember, in November, the NFL organized a private workout for Kaepernick in Atlanta in an apparent attempt to help him secure a spot in the league. The NFL arranged the workout opportunity for Colin Kaepernick. Teams had the opportunity to evaluate his readiness and level of interest in resuming his career. And his agents did say he wants to return to the NFL. And he screwed the entire thing up, remember? He moved it. People couldn't find where he was. He had somebody helping him, running routes and such. That guy got a gig with the NFL, but no team picked Kaepernick up. Because he's not good enough. And he brings too much baggage to the table. That's why. I think it's interesting, by the way, that the NFL is seeking help and guidance from a radicalized leftist who wears Castro t-shirts and Che Guevara t-shirts. Two people, murderous people, two horrible people, and a guy who donates to violent leftist organizations. They want him for help and guidance for anything. That's nuts. So please expect this fall, expect NFL ratings to drop again. Because you remember what happened when all of the kneeling started taking place. People started tuning out. Because those who were broadcasting these games were giving the kneelers attention and focusing on them. And people got sick and tired of it. And if Kaepernick is on board anywhere and the kneeling continues, The posturing continues. This activism continues. You can look for the ratings for the NFL games to drop again. ESPN's in real trouble as far as ratings are right now. Of course, partly that's because there are no sports to report. I watched them do a cornhole tournament over the weekend. I was amazed. I was wondering, is this ESPN the Ocho? Is dodgeball up next? They're that desperate. And part of it's because ESPN is too woke for real people. Welcome back. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast for Tuesday, the 17th of June, 2020. I've got all these stats about ESPN and their various shows. I mean, I understand that a lot of it is because there's no baseball. Not much for them to show. And I was joking around about the Ocho and dodgeball, but that's how desperate they are to fill time right now. I mean, I'm sitting... Saturday, I was out running around and I stopped into some place in a little town nearby to grab some lunch while I was on the road. And I'm sitting there in the booth and I glance up at the TV while I'm waiting for for my tacos to hit the table. And I see guys playing cornhole and I'm thinking, wait a minute, ESPN is showing cornhole? And I just thought, wow, I've watched ping pong, right? These guys playing ping pong. That is edge of your seat stuff. It's so fast paced. It's almost violent. It's amazing. You wouldn't think so. But cornhole makes golf look speedy. I mean, it's just crazy. Anyway, so they're showing that. And I, no offense to you golfers, I play golf. I'm just saying, golf on TV, unless you're into golf, golf on TV is what you turn on if you want to take a nap. I'm just saying, you know. So, in fact, I had I knew a guy years ago, back when the Golf Network first started up. There was the channel, just nothing. It was just the Golf Network. And he was in engineering at a place I worked, and he went to work for the Golf Network when they were first getting started. And I congratulated him on his new career, and I would think of him every time I took a nap. But and he said, yeah, that's really funny. But cornhole? Oh, my gosh. And you know what was crazy? My first thought was, wait a minute, that's cornhole on ESPN? And then it hit me, those guys have sponsors on their shirts. Like bass fishermen. I mean, oh, man. And don't get me started. Brian Regan has a whole thing on bass fishing. So that's go look that one up. Wait, there's a writer? There's a writer on this TV show? What's he write? It's a fish. It's a beauty fish. Oh, man. Oh, man. The highest rated ESPN studio show all day. First Take. 211,000 viewers. It stacks up in the ratings of all of cable. It's number 93. Number 93. Putting those numbers into context compared to other shows the same day on cable, Nick Cannon Wild and Out 15 on VH1, 50% more viewers than ESPN's top show. First Take. National Geographic's Smuggler Secret Stash, twice as many viewers as First Take. Cartoon Network. Craig of the Creek on Cartoon Network. 200,000 more viewers than First Take. CNBC's Jay Leno's Garage. Jay Leno's Garage outperformed First Take on ESPN. Hey, I watched Jay Leno's Garage. Ant Anstead, Master Mechanic on Motor Trend TV, outpulled First Take. I also watched that show because I like working on my cars. I got to tell you, ESPN's in trouble. And it's like I said, it's primarily because there's just nothing for them to cover right now. But at the same time, SportsCenter has become woke center. It's become political. And you know what people don't tune into sports for? Politics. And ESPN needs to learn this lesson. People don't tune in for politics when they're watching their sports. It's coming to college football, too. You're not going to get away from that. In fact, Kevin Warren, he's the commissioner of the Big Ten Conference. He's a former Minnesota Vikings executive. He intends to turn this Power 5 league into what could become one sensationally woke league. He's formed the Big Ten Anti-Hate and Racist Anti-Racist Coalition. Yeah, that's a long one. Let me repeat it for you. The Big Ten Anti-Hate and Anti-Racism Coalition. He will assure that every single Big Ten athlete is allowed to kneel and may even take a knee himself. Using a liberal talking point, he aims to fight so-called voter suppression. If you believe in fairies, Warren also aims to register every single Big Ten Conference athlete to vote. In a Sunday telephone interview, Kevin Warren said, "I'm going to personally empower student athletes to express their right to free speech and peaceful protest." Does this mean Big Ten athletes can freely kneel in protest? Oh, yeah. He says, "Correct. That's part of the beauty of the country that we will live in. We will live in. Individuals are encouraged to express their rights to free speech and also peaceful protests." End quote. He didn't rule out kneeling himself. First, though, he wants to hear from the Big Ten Anti-Hate and Anti-Racism Coalition, a group of 180 student athletes, coaches, and officials from the 14 conference schools, is still looking for more low ratings programming. ESPN, consider live coverage of those coalition meetings. So you will not even be able to escape politics and wokeness by watching college ball. You'll be watching student athletes display their ignorance on the field by kneeling during the national anthem and disrespecting our nation and its flag, using it to promote their ignorance. Just remember that when they say this is not about the flag or the military or anything like that, that's a lie. Because at the heart of all of this, if you go read what Black Lives Matter really believes in, I've directed you there several times. Go to the Black Lives Matter website and click on the link to What We Believe and read through the points of what they believe. What they believe in is tearing this nation down and building something else. So all of this kneeling, all of this expression, all of this is about destroying the United States of America. It's what it's all about. And encouraging people to participate, especially college student athletes, young people who really don't have a firm grip on anything about our nation because our education system no longer teaches our history. They teach progressive opinions on history. They're being indoctrinated. They're being led by the nose and they're being fed lies day in and day out on college campuses. And they're giving them now an opportunity to act out on the field during our national anthem on the college level. You can expect some drop in viewership of college games as a result. I would also expect that you can expect a drop in contributions to college football programs until sanity is restored. Because they're big donors, you know, people who keep those football programs alive. Oh, sure. Some of the corporate sponsorships will increase because corporations are desperate to prove to everybody, oh, we care, when what they really care about is the bottom line and their sponsorship is actually an act of fear. So if you're into sports, it's already been a bad year. But because of Black Lives Matter and leftist lies, it's going to get worse. Because sitting in your home, they're going to be shoving all that through your TV into your living room.
Once again, I'm a little disappointed.
Yeah, me too, buddy. It is the Daily Perspective Podcast, diving into the second half on this Wednesday, the 17th day of June, 2020. And I hope you're doing really well, that all is good with you and yours. Have you seen what's happening in New York where 30-something fans of MSNBC can gather in huge crowds and protest? And they can march by the thousands, but the NYPD is kicking people out of parks and playgrounds. Yeah, in fact, they padlocked playgrounds in Jewish neighborhoods to keep them closed so that people couldn't get out in the sunshine and with their kids. Which, by the way, out in the sunshine is the best place to be. Because in the sunshine and the heat and the humidity, that's where the coronavirus has trouble surviving. But if you live in the Crown Heights or Brooklyn, some of those areas, Mayor de Blasio is making sure you and yours can't gather, that you can't take your kids out to play. But they're not doing anything about the protesters. In fact, their contact tracing, you know, the contact tracing is going on. They're questioning people, where you've been, who have you had contact with, that sort of a thing, trying to, well, I think this is amusing, actually. They're trying to cut back the spread of the coronavirus, which we're learning is already on the downturn without their help. But politicians have to stay busy, or they have to look busy. Politicians are that guy in the office with the clipboard who's always looking busy but never gets anything done. That's politicians. But they're not asking the protesters where they've been, or they've been told, actually, not to ask them if they've been while they're contact tracing. Don't ask people if they've been in the protests. They're actively ignoring these things. Drives me crazy. And speaking of anarchy and chaos, let's go over to Seattle, Washington. What used to be Chaz is now Chop, the Chop, because the A in Chaz stood for autonomous. And they can't be autonomous. They can't survive on their own because they didn't realize they don't produce anything. All they do is consume and create a lot of hot air. The media characterized it as a peaceful protest. The mayor called it a block party. Journalist Andy Ngo of Quillette described something much worse. Speaking with Fox News Monday, Ngo recalled his time spent in Seattle's Capitol Hill organized protest. That's the chop. Describing a place with two different personalities, one by day and one by night. A quasi-Jekyll and Hyde situation. Though the chop appears relatively peaceful during the day, Andy Ngo says the criminal elements come out at night. Quote, unfortunately, last night, that was made very clear when one person on a microphone and a loudspeaker was able to sic a mob of probably more than 100 people to chase down this business that was several blocks away. They just all descended on it. It was pure anarchy. They pushed up against the fence and all rushed in. It could have been extremely violent. Fortunately, it wasn't, according to what I heard from the owner and the staff. They had detained one of the comrades of this camp for alleged arson and theft. And because of that, all of his comrades came to help get him out. The police never came. Actually, that story is an auto shop. You know, a place that works on cars. They caught somebody spreading hand sanitizer on the counter of the auto shop, which contains alcohol, and setting the countertop on fire. They caught somebody in the act of committing arson, attempting to burn their business down. They caught them, put out the fire, called the cops. 19 times. The cops never came. This is not inside the zone. This is just outside the zone. And the cops, after 19 calls, didn't come. And for the sake of protecting their lives and their well-being, they ended up letting the arsonist go back to his friends. Otherwise, the mob would have ripped the place to shreds. Defenders of CHOP say that businesses in the area are sympathetic to the cause, some even providing food and services to the squatters. And though that might be partially true, Andy Ngo maintains that other businesses are not so enthusiastic. He says, for example, there's a Trader Joe's nearby who announced just a few days ago that they're closing indefinitely because of security and safety issues. So when you take that and you also see all of the businesses that are boarded up, that no cars can drive into the area, I don't see how the few anecdotes of positive experiences of some owners would be the representative voice, particularly when there are now some dissident voices coming out to speak and they're having to do it anonymously because of threats of retaliation. He also recalls seeing people openly carrying weapons, from handguns to rifles to batons, lack of medical care, drug use, homelessness, also rampant in the CHOP. He says, at night it's a completely different vibe than during the day. You see vagrants come here. Some of them are dealing with mental and health crises. There was an ambulance that was called yesterday. The fact that police are not going in should tell you quite a lot. And this is what my own sourcing had told me last week, is that if anybody needs help, you actually have to leave the physical zone and go return to the U.S., let's say, to get help. So this is now a one-week experiment in anarchy and chaos, and those who live there have to fend for themselves. Over the past weekend, Andy Ngo also shared additional footage from the CHOP. That footage showed sidewalks and storefronts covered top to bottom with profane anti-police graffiti. It's an awful situation. And the leadership in Seattle's just letting it happen. I saw video last night of the area. Actually, it was on Tucker Carlson. If you have an opportunity, if you haven't seen it, pull it up on Fox News on their website. They have all this video of the shows. And you can see the video coming from the CHOP. People clearly on drugs. People clearly drunk. People clearly who have mental issues. People, one particular guy, walking around with an AR-15, at the ready and a handgun hanging out of his pocket, just walking around. Anarchy and chaos. It doesn't speak well of the younger people in our society today. Not at all. Not at all. It also doesn't speak well of Democrat leadership. Because Seattle is run by Democrats. Democrats who say, oh, this is just kids having a party, just having a good time. It's a summer of love. It'll pass. In the meantime, these people are defacing private property. They're creating their own law enforcement by mob rule. We're seeing stories of people fighting. We've seen stories of people going in to who contradict what they're telling them or what they believe, and the violence that happens to those people as a result. One street preacher went in and was forcibly held against his will and sexually assaulted. And yet, the police aren't there. There's no law enforcement. There's no consequence. If you're a parent, you know what happens if you don't draw a line in the sand and enforce the rules. You know that if you let your kid pitch a fit in the supermarket without repercussions, that what the kid learns is that all they have to do to get what they want is to embarrass you publicly. And you may know parents who just let this happen. And their kids just ruin every social gathering at some point by pitching a fit and making everybody uncomfortable while the parent does nothing. We're watching city blocks in Seattle, Washington, occupied by those children. Right now, those children who weren't corrected when they should have been, those children who were not disciplined properly, those children who didn't learn that there is right and there is wrong and there is a clear delineation, those children who have been brainwashed by their teachers in the educational system to believe leftist lies. Those children who went on to college to be further indoctrinated by aging hippies who are now college professors preaching the lies of leftism to impressionable minds. That's who we're seeing right now occupying the CHOP. And the reason they can is because they're allowed to. Because the people in charge of Seattle they're that parent who lets their children pitch a fit in the grocery store, throwing things off the shelves, creating havoc, laying in the floor screaming. And just let them do it. You know from personal experience dealing with situations like this in your personal life, this is not who we need in charge of anything in our country. And so when it's time to vote next time, make sure to kick those parents out of office. Back for this last segment of this Wednesday edition of the podcast. couple of more things I want to get to before we slip out the door here. I'm not going to go into detail on this first thing, but I'm leaving it in show notes today because I want you to read the entire article on the Powerline blog. It's entitled, Joe Biden, the American People Are Stupid. And I think it's important for you to read this because it is the actual account of someone who sat in a meeting with Joe Biden. Someone who's got some cred. And he shares a story about how Biden sat him down in his office and bellowed at him to intimidate him about something. This is the guy who worked with a union whose boss was famous for having a volcanic temper. And and he sat down in Biden's office, and I'll quote this one thing. Once I sat down, Biden got up and started to yell at me. He bellowed, quote, you are going to lose this issue. You are going to lose this issue because the balanced budget constitutional amendment sounds good, and the American people are stupid and will support anything that sounds good. That is a quote from the Democrats' candidate for the presidency of the United States. The American people are stupid and will support anything that sounds good. This is the man the Democrats are supporting. This is the man the DNC is pushing on America. I want you to read the whole article. It's from the Powerline blog, and it is in today's show notes. So make sure you get the show notes for today's podcast. Go to dailyperspectivepodcast.com and grab the show notes. If you're listening live, they'll be up in about half an hour. If you are listening to the podcast, they're already there. Go grab the show notes. The show notes are the links to the things that I talk about during the podcast, the articles I'm using that I read from and I reference. And what's important is that usually there are further links for more reading and more information. More information is always better. Always. Well, there's some good news. After weeks of anti-racism and anti-police brutality protests, it seems most states are not seeing an expected second coronavirus peak. Good news for Americans concerned about a wave of the deadly virus hitting just as the presidential campaign season heats up. Of course, you know, we've been told, oh, there's going to be a second wave. Oh, you need to stay indoors, unless you're protesting. More than 16 days after the protests began, Minneapolis, which saw some of the largest demonstrations, has few new positive cases, according to Fox News. Quote, Minnesota health officials are conducting coronavirus tests for protesters at four sites in Minneapolis and St. Paul. So far, more than 3,300 protesters have shown up to be tested, and of that number, 40%, or about 1,300, have gotten their test results back. Of that number, only about 1.4% tested positive for the virus. That's lower than the 3.7% positivity rate reported last Friday of 13,000 test results nationwide. It's also lower than the current 7-day average rate of positive tests, which also stands at 3.7%. Now, cities like Chicago, Illinois, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and Boston, Massachusetts have also seen few new cases of COVID-19 crop up in the wake of protests, many of which numbered in the thousands of people. Both cities have set up additional coronavirus testing sites for protesters after instructing those who attended the massive Black Lives Matter demonstrations to get tested for the virus as soon as possible, even if they were not showing symptoms. There's much more to this. Get the show notes. But the bottom line is we're on the downside. Oh, way on the downside. And coronavirus, like other viral infections, like the flu, it appears to be seasonal. We're on the downslope. And all of the speculation, the horror, the nail biting, the clutching of pearls is just more fear-induced nothingness. It just is. President Trump has signed an executive order, did this yesterday, aimed at reforming police practices in America after a series of high-profile police killings sparked nationwide protests and riots. President Trump, who's opposed to growing calls to defund the police departments, He's calling for increased transparency and accountability for police misconduct, a limit on the use of chokeholds, and increased use of non-police personnel to deal with issues related to mental health or drug addiction. The order is titled Safe Policing for Safe Communities. It acknowledges instances of police abuse and brutality and the negative impact that has had on community relationships with police. It establishes a national certification and credentialing system for law enforcement agencies, creates a federal database to track officers credibly accused of wrongdoing, discourages the use of chokeholds unless an officer's life is in danger, and encourages Congress to pass further police reforms. Of course, the president did meet with families of victims, including Ahmaud Arbery, Botham Jean, Antoine Rose, Jamel Roberson, and Tatiana Jefferson, Michael Dean, Darius Tarver, Cameron Lamb, and Everett Palmer. So we'll see what happens as a result of that. But the president has taken action. His opponents are saying it's symbolic, it's nothing, it won't accomplish anything. They want much harsher measures. They want to see severe restrictions placed on police, and some of them want the police eliminated. Years ago, Paul Harvey had something to say about what a policeman is.
Policeman. A policeman is a composite of what all men are, I guess, a mingling of saint and sinner, dust and deity. Culled statistics, wave the fan over stinkers, underscore instances of dishonesty and brutality because they are news. What that really means is that they are exceptional, they are unusual, they are not commonplace. Buried under the froth is the fact, and the fact is that less than 0.5% of policemen misfit that uniform, and that is a better average than you'd find among clergymen. What is a policeman? He of all men is at once the most needed and the most wanted. A strangely nameless creature who is sir to his face and pig or worse behind his back. He must be such a diplomat that he can settle differences between individuals so that each will think he won, but if a policeman is neat, he's conceited. If he's careless, he's a bum. If he's pleasant, he's a flirt. If he's not, he's a grouch. He must make instant decisions which would require months for a lawyer, but if he hurries, he's careless. If he's deliberate, he's lazy. He must be first to an accident, infallible with a diagnosis. He must be able to start breathing, stop bleeding, tie splints, and above all, be sure the victim goes home without a limp or expect to be sued. The police officer must know every gun, draw on the run, and hit where it doesn't hurt. He must be able to whip two men twice his size and half his age without damaging his uniform and without being brutal. If you hit him, he's a coward. If he hits you, he's a bully. A policeman must know everything and not tell. He must know where all of the sin is and not partake. The policeman from a single human hair must be able to describe the crime, the weapon, the criminal, and tell you where the criminal is hiding. But if he catches the criminal, he's lucky. If he doesn't, he's a dunce. If he gets promoted, he has political pull. If he doesn't, he's a dullard. The policeman must chase bum leads to a dead end, stake out 10 nights to tag one witness who saw it happen but refuses to remember. He runs files and writes reports until his eyes ache to build a case against some felon who'll get dealed out by a shameless Seamus or an honorable who isn't honorable. The policeman must be a minister, a social worker, a diplomat, a tough guy, and a gentleman. And, of course, he'll have to be a genius because he'll have to feed a family on a policeman's salary.
Paul Harvey. He sums it up nicely, I think. The police officer has to be all things to all people. And he can never win. And he has to do all of those things on a police officer's salary. I looked it up. On average across America, this goes from the big cities and the highest paid to the lowest. The average is around $54,000. And in some parts of the country, that's not enough to live on, especially if you have a family, kids. Some places it is. Most places. The major cities, not so much. And today, elements of our society are condemning police officers. That thin blue line that stands between them and disaster. But here, we'll always salute them. That's it for today. God bless you. Have a good one. We'll see you back here tomorrow for the next edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.